We are back with another episode of Meet the CEO. Today's episode takes us into all things agroecology. Lucy Asimwe from the Nature Fund and Accelerator joins us on this episode and sheds more light on working with agroecological enterprises. From over 1,300 cities and 130 countries, we bring you the Good Morning Africa podcast. Good morning, Africa, and welcome aboard your pulse on everything business in Africa. I am Ruth Adong. For more, follow us on Twitter at The Care Financial, and you can find me at Ruth Adong.
Lucy Asimwe is my name, working as a program manager here at Shona. Shona is a business development entity, and so we support growth enterprises, but to grow them into good businesses. And so my role is to, as a program manager, is to oversee a number of projects that we're running in the Agri-Food Founders Program. So we have two kinds of programs, the Agri-Food Founders Program, the Female Founders Program. Under each of those programs, we have several projects and initiatives that we are running. So Nature is one of the ones we're running under the Agri-Food Founders Program.
So talk to us about the fund.
The fund in itself doesn't exist in isolation. So I will go a few steps back to actually just talk about Nature itself, which is just a word, a unique expression, basically, of some properties of nature, soil health, natural resources, water, and so, which fits into agroecology. And so we twisted the word and called it Nature instead of Nature, So for agroecology, why agroecology? So for it, it's very holistic. Looks at the a different way of looking at agriculture in terms of the different value chain levels, looking at the environment itself, the soil health itself, the biodiversity, but also social values, which means that looks at the people that are also in the space, and so all those combined, for it looks at it holistically, and that's why we chose that. And so for it, it looks at certain principles like recycling, we look at soil health, biodiversity, animal health, social values, co-creation, because we know that stakeholders within the ecosystem don't exist, for example, in isolation. So you also look at equity and fairness, that the participants within a particular space also benefit equally at whatever level they are. So agroecology looks at all those aspects. And so our support to businesses is we are looking for businesses that want to drive that agenda within the food system. And so we believe that if they do that, then we will have a more sustainable food system. Like I mentioned, that you have also profitability in there, but you also see that our economy, our food economy, is not just basic, but it's also it has also grown and evolved to a large extent. And so this initiative, Nature itself, was is an initiative, of course, of BioVision, BioVision Foundation. It's a Swiss-based entity in partnership with Shona, which is a business development partner, and then Shona Capital, which is the fund manager. So it's a combination of both business acceleration and the fund. So we believe that the fund can't exist in isolation. You have to support businesses. And also talk about the support and the capacity to a certain extent within the agroecology space to be able to, one, sustainably use the fund, but also grow as businesses, to drive that change that we're looking for in terms of health, nutritious food, access to good and healthy products, also promoting healthy habits in terms of consumer behavior, all those other things. So we want to see that businesses can be able to drive that particular change.
Looking into the first cohort, what informed your readiness? You're like, okay, now we're ready to take in people, and now that we've done, and the criteria that went into that, and then the impact of the cohort that you've gone through.
So, speaking of impact, this can be many ways. It could be of, how do you call it? Desired impact, right?
Yeah.
So, we, Nature itself kicked off implementation last year, and so by the time we onboarded our first cohort by end of July. So we've just started implementing with them and already now beginning to explore where, how to fund and also the technical assistance they need. But going back, a few steps back, we consider certain criteria when we are identifying these enterprises. We call them agroecology enterprises. And so we look at enterprises that have a clear passion for agroecology and for the practice of it. They may be aware or they may already be practicing. So there are two kinds of entrepreneurs. You have those that are practicing by design. You have those that it's default that they're practicing, but probably the awareness is not as strong. But when they identify particular points within agroecology, they relate to that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you have those kinds of businesses. So we look at the businesses that have a passion, but they also have an impact towards operating anywhere along, you know, their value chain. So we also look at businesses in the input supply, in the processing space, even at production, because you have businesses that are production, but maybe large scale production. You're also looking at purchase and trading, promotion, those who are promoting consumption. What I need to make clear is that the keyword for enterprises is growth oriented. So by growth businesses, we are saying that these are businesses that have already been established to a certain extent. So it's not startups, it's not ideation businesses. And why them? And I will explain where they stand. These businesses, for example, when we look at the business criteria, they've been in existence for about 3 years. Yeah. In existence for about 3 years and more. And they're also earning revenue. We say 40,000 revenue, but sometimes we also look at, when we look below, we also look at how, in terms of the profitability of the businesses, even if the revenue is below 40,000. But that's usually one of the ones that gives us an indicator that this business is actually grown, because the revenue has grown to that extent. But then they also have a market opportunity, and they're profitable to a certain extent, or have a clear path to profitability, but then are also interested. So why that category of businesses? One, we believe that if we develop their capacity, combine it with capital, but then also link them to certain networks, we enhance their growth. But then these are businesses who will have the capacity now to practice the agroecology aspects, because to a certain extent, some of those practices require you to invest in them. They require you to have also the technical capacity, but then also the the manpower to be able to do that. But also, you at that stage, you have figured out your value chain. You have figured out your business model to a certain extent. Yeah. So we are coming in to enhance that, which means that you're able to now drive the changes that we are looking forward to in terms of healthy diets, economic health of the farmers. You can drive fair pay to farmers. So that means you're able to enter certain organized arrangements with farmers. It's not haphazard business. So that's why we're focusing on this business, because we know they can actually drive this change. So in terms of criteria, indeed, like, we have the business criteria, but we also have the agroecology criteria. But how do we know that this business is agroecological? Interesting. So I mentioned BioVision Foundation is one of our partners. Yeah. So they developed a business. It's a business agroecology criteria tool. So we have a lighter version. We have a deeper version. So the lighter version, when we're onboarding businesses, they self-assess. They check. It asks particular questions. Questions could be: Are you using synthetic inputs? It asks questions in reverse, but then you can check yourself yes and no, mm-hmm. and at the end of the day, it scores you to tell you whether you're in that space. So for sometimes you're not going to mention agroecology, because the term indeed is a complex term. Most people don't resonate with it, but because they check themselves and ask those questions, it's able to tell them where they're at. So that's how we're also able to select businesses that we think fit the profile that we are going to take up in the cohort. But now at the selection, we selected a number of businesses. At that time, we selected 30. Those 30, we subjected them now to the deeper BACT assessment. That one involved, we integrated with a value chain mapping tool. So because the value chain mapping tool helps us to understand, but also helps us to work with the business going backward in terms of their value chain, understanding who are the players and what activities are there, and also forward, like, you know, up to the market. So we subject the BACT assessment to those different activities. how, if it's production, how are you producing? Are you using certain, are you using organic or synthetic fiber? Are you recycling? How are you, you know, the number of questions that tool has. So it scores you to help the business understand where they lie at. So it brings out their weak points in terms of which, because agroecology has 13 principles. But going to your question on impact, so because they've just come on board, we have not, I'm hesitant to say that, oh, what impact have we achieved since we onboarded for cohort one, but I want to say, what impact are we driving to, and what are we, for example, you know, catalyzing so that we're able to achieve at least by the end of 2024, what shall we be, you know, documenting. So what's most important, I mentioned growth-oriented enterprises, we are facilitating growth. So revenue growth, which translates into profitability of these enterprises, is very crucial. We want to demystify the fact that agroecology enterprises are too small, or they are not investable, they are not profitable. So can we demonstrate that? Because we've invested in TA and the fund, yeah? So that revenue. And then we also want to increase the awareness and the intentional practice. I don't want to just say practice. Intentional practice by design within the business of agroecology. So because it's not just talking about it, it's not just a nice to have, but you're already, as a business, they can see the opportunity that there is for them as a business to actually practice agroecology. What markets is it going to get them into? And because right now, globally, you can see a shift into, like, especially for us, people who like consuming fresh produce, you actually want it safely produced, and you know, so which markets is it opening for you? How does that trickle down to other businesses that are even outside of the nature program, but are seeing already an opportunity, or are already hearing from the learnings of these AEEs or from the stories of these AEEs to transition into the practice of agroecology?
What are some of the changes you'd like to see in the agroecology space? Or let's say in your industry, because your industry is funding, it's agroecology, it's a mix of things. What are some of the changes you'd like to see? Because you're dealing with these businesses, you've seen some of the things are struggling. Do they need government help? Do they need your help? What are some of the changes you think would, like, spark the industry? And, you know, like you said, you want to need to not just catalyze change, profitability, and all those things. What are some of those changes that you think would be able to achieve all the things outside nature?
So I think one of the first things, I think for me, it's to have, like, broad awareness, you know, around that. So an awareness from the ecosystem players within agroecology, but then also the different people. So also you have, like, consumer awareness in terms of that. There are structural changes that I would really, really love to see. I mentioned earlier about the financing aspect. How do we have more financing that is very intentional as an incentive channel towards, you know, such enterprises or intending enterprises that are moving in that space? So it is actually there and available. And it's like institutionalized financing. When we talk about markets, it's not just talking about them, but do we have an environment that allows for those markets to actually develop and grow? Are there incentives for such businesses? So, for example, I mean, if we are encouraging healthy diets, and you have businesses that are moving in that space, what are the incentives at state level, maybe enabling environment level, that will encourage these businesses to grow? Is it that they have maybe fair taxes? Do they have, and taxes doesn't mean, for example, in terms of the income tax, but for example, if I'm bringing in equipment, you know, if I'm going into processing, what incentives are there for me as a business to encourage me? I mean, I can't be going, this and it's going to cost me more. I'll go the low hanging fruit that brings in the quick cash, yeah, because they're not charities, they're businesses. So that, I think it has a lot to do with the business environment who encourages businesses to grow. Also the space for such, I talked about the small businesses. So this is a missing middle, but there's another missing middle somewhere. Like I talked about the businesses that are smaller than these ones. They have been in business, but they are failing to move from that stage. So I think also the change could be that what support can also be for such businesses to actually, you know, grow. Grow to a certain extent, I think. Yeah, that's my short one.
Anger bite people make us feel we're not well. Okay.
Let's go with the first cohort of the businesses you onboarded. How many women were part of it, mm-hmm. and did you have to create like special room or special allowances for the women to come on board?
So the first cohort, very interesting question. I like that you asked this. The first cohort, we only have female businesses out of 20 selected. Three of those are Kenyan, only one is Uganda. So. And one of the things we observed was that, yes, we had, and I mentioned the criteria we had, yeah? So we had a number of women enterprises that applied, but also a big chunk of them lacked, like, basic information. So we have women. I don't know whether it's an ecosystem issue or something, but the more advanced businesses are, you start to see the female-led businesses drop off. So either there's like a comfort zone at operating at small scale, and when it requires growth, there's certain incentives maybe that knock them out in terms of access to finance and things like that. So for the first cohort, we observed such dynamics. We had applicants, but we didn't have strong applicants in terms of like meeting even like the bare minimum. So there are those that we said, okay, we're not taking you in this cohort, but we are seeing some things. If, for example, you provide this kind of information, some of them have not provided some management account, some of them have not provided some basic information about their business, but also their profitability was not yet. We only had, for example, we had could only track for 2 years and we needed to see, for 1 year, and we need to see a pattern. Even if you're below 40,000, if we are to consider you even at 10, 20,000, at least we see that every year there's a positive change. But if you are at that level and there's a negative change in your financials, there's a red flag. Yeah. So for some, we saw something good and said, okay, you can prepare for the second cohort, but these are the things we need you to prepare for. So in terms of maybe support now, so we are interested, but not for this cohort because we need to get a cohort going. And so, but for the second cohort, please prepare this and this. So we have a number that we actually push to the second cohort to prepare so that we assess them at that level. Now, because we observed that in the first cohort, of course, it doesn't look good. I mean, out of 20, you have four. And of those four, three are Kenyan and one Ugandan. That means in Uganda, is it that we don't have good businesses in Uganda? I don't think so. So in the second cohort, what we are doing, we are intentionally recruiting. So we've approached women networks because we also observed a number did not apply. So there's a thing also, like sometimes there is that, but then you also don't have many female entrepreneurs applying for such opportunities, either because I don't know whether it's because we're second guessing, I don't know. But a number, those that applied were small, then a number didn't apply. So we've now been intentional at approaching female-led networks. Like you will, the Uganda Women Entrepreneurs Association. So those kinds of networks to encourage their members to apply. Now we see a number of women applying. So as of last week, out of 29 applications, we had 10 female-led enterprises. So what we want to see is that at least of that, we have a very good, like good, it's not just applicants, but also quality applicants from Uganda and Kenya, and a good balance also. From both countries. Yeah, so we've been more intentional this time. We're not reducing the criteria because we're also being fair. It's a business, yeah. But in terms of encouraging them to apply, we don't limit ourselves to 50,000, we put a different 40,000 revenue limit. We're saying, okay, even with below 40,000, let's focus on your positive year-to-year growth. If there is a positive year-to-year growth, then there's something good you're doing in your business that is worth us considering. So those are some of the incentives that we've put. But yeah, and it's applying across. So I think we will have a good, in the second cohort, we'll have a good representation. I'm hoping, let me not just, yeah, I'm really hoping that we have a very good representation of female-led enterprises.
Your main story is brought to you by BK Capital. Did you know that you can get up to 10.4% interest on your franc investment if you invest with the Aguka Fund? For more information, please check out www.bkcapital.rw. And a quick look at the markets. The market segment is powered by the Development Bank of Rwanda. We empower you. The Johannesburg Stock Exchange Share Index closed almost flat at 73,604 on Thursday as solid gains in resource-linked companies, particularly gold miners, were partly offset by weakness in financials and industrials. In business news, Exxaro Resources, South Africa's largest coal miner, said its 2023 profit would fall as much as 30%, mainly due to low coal export prices. Separately, the country's largest insurer, Sanlam, reported a robust full-year performance with double-digit growth in key financial metrics, including upping its dividends by 11%. On the domestic economic data front, South Africa's current account deficit widened sharply in the fourth quarter of 2023 to 2.3% of GDP from a revised 0.5% of GDP in the third quarter. Meanwhile, global investors continued digesting Fed Powell's cautious remarks on interest rates and awaited the crucial non-farm payroll report due on Friday. And a quick trip around Africa. Research body Economist Intelligence Unit projects the global GDP growth at 2.4% this year from last year's 2.3%. Emerging markets such as Kenya that are poised to record positive growth during the year will propel the prospect. It adds that emerging economies will power the global GDP growth over the next 5 years. However, the unit says growth prospects for this year are not strong as relatively high interest rates will constrain economic activities. The global outlook is further projected to improve between 2025 to 2028 with unexpected annual growth average of 2.7% aided by monetary easing and interest in technology and the energy transition. This, however, falls short of recent standards as global growth averaged 3% a year in the 2010s, according to the unit. The unit therefore expects that some emerging markets will continue to lower rates ahead of the Fed to support growth as the exchange rate outlook stabilizes. On the other hand, disinflation is forecast to continue, but upside risks persist. The post-pandemic normalization of supply alongside softer demand growth is expected to drive consumer price inflation lower in most markets. However, the rapid price gains of recent years will not be undone. In addition, upside risks continue to weigh on inflation outlook, the unit adds in part. Nevertheless, Matters Trade, the report highlights that although remaining far below the levels they reached during the pandemic, global shipping costs have risen as a result of the disruption of trade in the Red Sea. Thank you for always waking up with us. Good Morning Africa is a product of the K Financial. If you have suggestions or you just want to check out more stories, visit the website, that's thekfinancial.com, and don't forget to subscribe. You can also find us on all social media platforms at the K Financial, and you can find me at Ruth Adong.